You have found the Business Broker Growth Show with your host, Jason Cutter. This is the podcast for brokers who are ready to stop hoping for deals and start growing their pipeline. Our goal is to bring you strategies, stories, and insights that will be a catalyst to move you quickly from transactional deal makers to trusted advisors. Time for Business Broker Growth.
Hey everybody, Jason here with my new friend, Daniel Brainard from Next Step Capital here for the after show. Daniel, you're ready for more?
Oh yeah. Let's keep it rolling.
How was that first part for you? Did it feel like as long as it worked out to be of us just chatting?
No, it always goes by fast. I enjoy the conversation too much. I don't keep track of time that well.
I'm excited. You in the beginning, in the first segment, you mentioned having your own podcast launching it. You and I talked about that offline before, and you know, obviously, I'm a big supporter of podcasts. I think you know there's always enough space for podcasts. I think when I started mine, my sales went a long time ago. I didn't do it for a while, and then I heard somebody talk about it. It's like, you know what? Everyone has something to share, and then people like different things. Some people like Gary Vee. Some people hate Gary Vee. Some people like Dave Ramsey. Some people hate like Alex Hormozd. Like I'm thinking of the people that you mentioned, right? There's periods of times where it's like you like them or you don't want to hear them. And so I think there's something for everybody. I'm very excited for what your podcast is like and how that conversation flows. Yeah. I think that'll be fun. I think that'll be fun for you. I could see it being a very good, you know, valuable dialogue back and forth, especially if you can get some business owners on. You know, it should be a blast.
That's the goal. I like talking to, and I've always been intrigued by like how someone did something. Not the end result is always super cool. Like, hey, I got a Lamborghini, or I bought the dream house, or I, you know, finally flew private for this or that. Like that's always awesome. Whatever the thing is that it looks like on the tail end. But I like hearing the story. I like understanding how you navigated all those hard times, because I think people have seen versions of my life and wondered, you know, how on earth did this kid survive? And then also looked and been like, in the same breath, be like, oh, it must be nice. And I'm like, you have no idea how terrible it can be.
Well, it must be nice that his dad co-signed and just basically got him into business. And that's why he's successful, right?
Yeah.
Must be nice.
must be so nice. And I'm like, you know, I think I felt the weight of my dad signing that, and it didn't feel like a blessing. It felt like such a high obligation to not fail.
Yeah, quite heavy. Yeah.
He didn't put that on me. It just like personally, I didn't look at that as like, oh, heck yeah, this is easy. I looked at it as like, I got to make $220 in the next 30 days to make that payment, because I am not asking him for money. Even though my dad is such an awesome guy, like he would have happily helped me with that more than I would have needed, but like that was now my problem, and so I had to figure that out. And praise the Lord, like we did every month, paid it off a couple years early, like, you know. But he let me cut my teeth on, in my opinion, like baby business. You know, my first venture was 10 grand, not 100,000 or a million. It was you know, $10,000 piece of equipment. And he didn't just willy-nilly hand me that and then wish me well. It was, hey, you know, here's how math works. So if you get a $220 payment and you've got 4 weeks of the month and you mow a yard every week, how many yards, you know, I mean, it's kind of simple arithmetic, how many yards equal even plus fuel and this and that. And then you need to go above that and do better. And so, yeah, you know, it must be nice was more of like, a baby algebra equation in the finance space of like X plus Y equals you better succeed.
which is fascinating too, to think of, and this is not the where we wanted to go next with the conversation, but to think about like how many buyers out there right now are coming from, let's say, a corporate job. They've only worked corporate. They got laid off. They cashed out. They got some kind of severance. or they're just done with it. They've got a nest egg and they're like, I'm going to buy a business, right? Like entrepreneurship through acquisition, but like somebody who's only been corporate and not had to make every decision in a business, just their decisions. Yeah. And, you know, and where that's the learning curve, I won't say it's dangerous, but like, where's the learning curve with that? You know, to your point about the buyer education. So they understand, you can imagine them buying a FedEx contract and being like, okay, this is just easy, right? Like you just show up and do meetings every once in a while and, you know, submit reports. Yeah. And people tell me what to do. It's like, no. You're now the person. Like it's all on you.
That works until you get a call from the mechanic and that truck is no longer viable. It's worth $5,000 as it sits. You need to put 15 in it to fix it. Well, for 15 grand, you might as well go buy another used one. You got a dead one over here. So do you fix it or do you buy a new one? I don't care. I couldn't care less what your answer is.
But
you got to answer it because somebody's got to decide. And an indecisive business owner is terrifying. I think there, and that's why like we are still actively working on the education space and how we want to approach it. Cause I didn't want to be charging people like $20,000 a year to have a conversation with me every once in a while. Cause I don't like that side of the coaching space. So we've looked at like low cost, high volume coaching. You know, what does it look like? My leg started cramping. What does it look like? To be able to talk to 500 contractors at once for 20, 30, 40, 50 bucks a month, but I can put it on a platform and educate them and say, hey, here's, if you want to revisit that conversation, it's right here. Or somebody else asked that question and we gave them a different answer than you. Why? I can deep dive that. Cause I think they need to do so much research before they just spend millions or hundreds of thousands of dollars. But some don't. So
agreed. Yeah. So you're talking about the course. Let's go into the next segment here, which is the broker growth strategies. So these are things that you feel are important, valuable for growing a brokerage, you know, just general sales and marketing and business anyway, but we'll apply the lens to the broker side. So when you think of the top things, what comes to mind for kind of growth strategies?
For growing the brokerage itself, and what I sent you, and I'm going to refer back to my notes, or I would have probably picked other stuff, is we went with networking, honesty, integrity, and follow-up. And honesty, integrity is kind of one and the same for these purposes, but you know, in the networking space, knowing people is everything. You know, whether that's pointing a buyer to a vendor service or pointing a seller to a bookkeeper because their books need to be cleaned up for 12 months before we do this, or helping them save on insurance or any of that stuff. Like having great connections has just always been a positive. I don't see how that's a negative if you know some people and have good relationship with them, not just, hey, I know that person, but you know, I've had some really awesome friends. And once again, myself as an example, some brokers in the space, they make money that makes it look like what I do is a joke. And it doesn't mean I'm bad at my job. It means they're just so astronomically awesome and have been for decades. And I call them and I know they don't need money, but I don't know what else to offer them. And so I'm like, hey, can you answer? And I understand the coaching space, so like time is money. So I'm like, hey, can you help me with something? And they do. And they're super kind about it. And I'm like, can I pay you for that? And they just kind of chuckle and they're like, no, honey, you're good. they appreciate it. They don't mean that to make fun of me. But, you know, the response I get is they're like, we see the hustle. We see what you're trying to do. We have no issues helping you.
Yeah.
And via my network is how they're okay answering that phone call. Once again, if they didn't care for me, they wouldn't pick up the phone. And so whether it's brokering or entrepreneurship or any sector you're in, like that network is just awesome to be able to make a connection and say, hey, I don't have that answer. Let me connect you with someone who does. Or, hey, I am that person that, because I know them and they know someone who has a need, it now makes it to me. I've just never seen how that's a negative.
Yeah.
You can know bad people. You also don't have to network with them.
yeah.
And for people who don't have a network, that's the place I tell them to start. You do free phone calls. You do intros with people that message you on LinkedIn and say, hey, do you want to be on a podcast? And, you expand in whatever areas you can, and you have to give value first sometimes before you can ask for something in return. Or, you know, the lady who is in my home state, she's super awesome, super knowledgeable. She didn't ask for anything from me, but, you know, for all the information she's given me, and I know, like, obviously money wouldn't be a bad thing, but she's made it known she doesn't care about that because she makes plenty. And so I was like, well, let me ask you a question. Do you like coffee? She's like, oh yeah, we drink, you know, I'm drinking it right now. I love coffee. Well, my wife is from Honduras. And so we have, her family has coffee farms down there. So we get direct source, you know, from coffee farms. And so I was like, hey, I'll send you a few bags. Because I think it's a kind gesture to say, like, you've helped me so tremendously. I can't really do anything for you, but I can be kind. And give something back to my network. And so we send coffee to people, you know, so many people, it's hilarious. You know, and then the others being like honesty and integrity.
Yeah.
If I don't know something, or if I have to have that hard conversation, like that's where we thrive is, you know, if somebody asks me like, well, why is my business not selling? I don't want to just give them some nonsense answer. I want to actually be like, hey, it's because your payroll sucks. You know, and then there's being honest in the sense of, you know, how we broker, how we market. Like if a client comes and starts asking me how we're doing something, I'm going to stop and take the time and explain to them, this is it. This was our conversation. This is how we can help you. And then sometimes, like, we've had clients call and say, hey, I want to sell my $1 million business for $1 million. And I say, it's maybe worth 600. Like, I will be completely straightforward with you and tell you, I can't help you with that. Maybe somebody else can get you $1 million for it. I can't, because I don't see $1 million of value there. But having that ability to be open with them, stand on what we believe in. You know, I think if you're going to start a brokerage firm or just be a broker, you need to have certain principles that you say, hey, this is where I draw the line. I'm not going to help you fudge your books. I'm not going to sit here and lie about, you know, something you're doing in your business that's going to come back and possibly take away my licensure or get me in a lot of trouble. I don't want to use my E&O insurance if I don't have to. So, you know, being able to just be transparent with everybody, that to me, that seems so casual. If it's not for others, I would encourage them to work on it. But I want my clients to feel like I'm going to give them that honest answer. You know, one of the guys, we're listing his company right now. Our first conversation was, how much do you want to sell it for? X. I was like, awesome. That sounds good. He goes, but I do want to know what you think it's worth. I'm like, well, you were going to get that either way. but he said, if it's worth less, I just want you to tell me. And I was like, yeah, of course. I said, the only reason I ask your number, because some clients don't want to give it to me. The reason I ask your number is I want to see if it's an emotional thing, or, you know, somebody just told you one day that it's worth a certain amount of money.
Yeah.
I want to see where you're coming from. Like, if you say, hey, I'm in the FedEx space, these things average 60 to 70 cents on the gross revenue dollar. So $1 million should sell 600, 700. There's some variables that'll take it up or down. And you come to me and say, I want to sell it for 900. I'm going to go, okay. Why? Where'd it come from? I don't mind. Maybe it's worth 900. Maybe you have brand new trucks across the board, and that would increase the value, because you might have $600,000 worth of trucks. Well, then it's possibly justified. If you have $100,000 worth of trucks, I'm trying to figure out where we're bridging the gap here. Because then all you're going to do is get mad at me 6 months from now when we've not gotten the first phone call on it. And so I want to be honest with you. And then I have to go negotiate on your behalf with some integrity. I have to be, you know, I have to be honest without disclosing all of the details, but I can't do that in a way that, that puts us in a vulnerable position. You know, when you're talking about sales strategies, you saying something wrong, trying to be flashy can come back to bite you in the rear end very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so if there's a spot where I just need to be open and honest, it's kind of like that joke from the movie 8 Mile, like I'll call out the issues first so that you don't have to.
Right.
You know, if the fleet sucks, then I'm going to acknowledge that. We're not going to sit here and pretend like it's, there's an asset sheet. It says what they are. If all those trucks have 500,000 miles on them, you're going to see that pretty fast. But then I'm going to turn it and we're going to talk about the good sides of the business. I'm not lying to you. I can be very, you know, ethically okay with how I handled that. But yes, this part is bad. Let me show you why we think it's good. And then it's between you and I to determine if there's something to bridge the gap there. If not, okay.
Yeah. You know, and I think that's so important when you know the things that are going to come up and you don't just ignore or avoid them, but you bring them up in a way that's, you know, part of the conversation. I think that's valuable. Yeah. You mentioned on the list too, follow up. What does that mean to you and why is that important? If you're listening to this and thinking, I want this level of authority, I just don't have the time to build it, that's exactly what Business Broker Growth does for you. Most brokers know that they need consistent content, better positioning, and real digital visibility. They just don't have the bandwidth to create it or the systems to keep it going. And that's what we build for you. The content engine, the visibility strategy, and authority signals, everything you need that we've talked about here. So if you want this impact without adding another full-time job to your plate, go to businessbrokergrowth.com to learn more about what it would look like for your business. Now back to the episode. Yeah. And I think that's so important when you know the things that are going to come up and you don't just ignore or avoid them, but you bring them up in a way that's, you know, part of the conversation. I think that's valuable. Yeah. You mentioned on the list too, follow up. What does that mean to you and why is that important?
I think just maybe it's different in other brokering spaces that, that aren't logistical related, but like one of the biggest things we hear, and I hope we're great at it, you know, or at least better than some of our competitors is I guess follow-up is an issue. There are seasons of life where I struggle with it more, not because we don't want to, because we were fixing systems of how we did it. And I was trying to figure out the better way to do it that, you know, when you post one business for sale and you get 40 or 50 inquiries, that's 40 or 50 conversations. I don't have time for 40 or 50 conversations. Or let me rephrase that. I have time for 40 or 50 conversations if I list a deal, sell a deal, list a deal, sell a deal.
Right.
If I want to list 5 or 6 deals or 10 or 12 deals or 40 or 50 deals, something in that system of operations has to change. And a bottleneck that we saw early on and something that like, as we build out the firm, the systems, any pipelines, anything we're using, CRMs, whatever, website, I don't care, is follow-up is a bottleneck where enough data needs to be going out constantly and enough check-ins need to be going out constantly that somebody doesn't feel like they're just sitting out there waiting for us to get back with them. Especially with tech and AI, you know, and that's something that we hear from people, buyers and sellers, where it's like, well, I talked to so-and-so from the buyer side and it took him 3 weeks to send me back an email. And I'm like, only time that that has happened to me is like just abnormal error. Like I accidentally opened the email on my phone and then didn't hit the unread button for me to be able to like send the PDF when I got to my computer. And so it's like a one-off and that's human error is everywhere. So like there's a margin there where I'm like, that's fine. But then you also have like a group of, we had a group of sellers we were talking to and they said, yeah, we presented this to one broker and he said, circle back with me in a month and I'll see about listing it. And I was like, is there like a variable in here that I missed? Like, is there something like that you all said to him, you didn't say to me, that would make that month plausible, like, you know, put in play? And right. He said, not that I know of, like, I've said everything to you that I've said to him. And I'm like, I could probably put you on the market in like 6 or 8 days. And 2 or 3 or 4 of those is going to be just how fast you can send me the packet we ask for. But to fill out a listing document's like an hour. I mean, it's not, you know, it's plug and play documents. Like, this is not rocket science. We, at least that's how we have it set up. And so like on follow-up, I'm like, how is that such in a day of AI? We've got a virtual assistant. Her name's Jack. She's super awesome. I encourage everybody to have some version of that where like, if I miss the email, it's immediate that she will circle up and at least not make a client feel like they're just sitting out in the wind waiting for something. Now there are times where we have to say like, hey, there's a tax return being completed. Give me a couple weeks. I have no control over that.
Yeah.
And we can say, follow up with me anytime you want to about it and just check in. But for somebody to just not get a response for days or weeks at a time, you know, that's something that I try and set guidelines with my clients and people in my life, even just personally, where I'm like, if it's a text, it's probably not that important. If it's a phone call, my goal is to get back to it within an hour or two. Sometimes it's longer, sometimes it's shorter. And then, but the average is like 2-ish hours, maybe 3. And then if we have scheduled meetings, like we're on them outside of being sick or like a catastrophe, we're on them. And emails, you know, same thing. It's within the business day. Now, if we're in an active thread and we're actively working on a problem, it's going to be significantly faster. But I think also, you know, to tie in with follow-up is like setting some boundaries and or guidelines for yourself of like, hey, I had a client ask me one day, he was like, you don't respond to texts very quickly. And I was like, nope. It's like, there you go. Correct. And he said, why? And I said, because I probably get 50 an hour and there's just only so many I can respond to, not counting phone calls, emails, LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook. I mean, you know, you just, there's 20 apps nowadays on your phone. You got to go look at and see if there's a message on. And so I was like, but you notice the second you call me within half an hour, if you're a seller of mine, I'm usually answering the phone. Now, if I'm on a podcast for a while, then that's different. But you know, the follow-up there is highly important. I don't try and starve off those conversations. It could be good news or bad news. I need to talk to them.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. To me, that's, I know it sounds dumb because it should be a given, but it's almost like I see it as such an issue that I didn't know how not to acknowledge it.
Before a seller ever speaks to you, they look you up. They scan your name, they search your LinkedIn, they read your last few posts. And in about 60 seconds, they decide whether you feel like a trusted advisor or just another broker. Most brokers never see that moment, but it happens every day. That's why we built the Digital Impact Assessment. It's a structured evaluation of how your online presence actually shows up in 4 ways: authority, positioning, visibility, and engagement. And if you want to know what sellers are seeing before they book a call with you, just remember you can't improve what you don't measure. All right, now back to this amazing conversation.
To me, that's, I know it sounds dumb because it should be a given, but it's almost like I see it as such an issue that I didn't know how not to acknowledge it.
No, and I think what's wild is it is an issue. It's a perpetual issue, sales, business. It's one of those things where the follow-up just doesn't matter. And it's generally with operations or business owners. You know, a business broker is an owner of their own business, even if they're, you know, a one person shop. Is for some reason, it's generally the ones that are not successful and maybe wondering why they don't have more business. And then they get too busy and then just things fall apart and they have no systems. And, you know, it's just fascinating. And I love what you said too about the expectation is, you know, if somebody texts, then it's only so important. You know, if it's really important, call. But I'm the same way. Like, I don't jump. My phone is generally has no notification, like no sounds on. Right. So if you text me, it's only a function of when I see it that I'll know. Yeah. if you call, I'll know, but otherwise everything is silent because it just drives me crazy. And if it's important, you call. If it's not, right? Like I know, like with, it's funny, I tell people all the time, with my parents, like they're retired. They for a period of time, they were going on cruises. They were super busy. I'm super busy. They know we're busy. We text back and forth to coordinate when we're going to set time to call and talk to each other and, you know, for regular updates. I know if my mom calls me, something must be wrong, right? Because she doesn't just call me to chat. Like we know, but like if she calls me, I know to answer it because somebody's sick, somebody died, something is wrong. Like there is a crisis, because it's escalated from text coordinating and scheduling calls, like, which might sound weird with parents, but it's like, you know, everyone's so busy and they understand that. And so I think that is lost where people get upset because they don't, you know, get a text response, like, but it's a text. It's not meant for communication. Neither is email.
Clients are different from like family. I kind of have a rule amongst all of my, everybody in my family is kind of entrepreneurial or business owner or something like that. Some of us are deeper in than others on just like intensity. Everybody's successful in their own regard, but something outside of my wife and my mom and dad, something that we have kind of put in place and I started this years ago was like, if you call me once, because family, like it could just be chit chatting, you know, hey, I saw a cool truck on the interstate and I wanted to tell you about it. I have brothers that are entrepreneurial, like they'll call me and be like, hey, how would you handle this client or handle this issue? Or like, can I just use a sounding board, vice versa? Cousins, like, I mean, it's just, we have a massive family and I love it, but we kind of set it in place of like, if you call me twice back to back, somebody had better be in trouble. There better be a decent issue. If you just call me once and I miss it, like I apologize if that hurts your feelings, but like you'll be fine and I'll get back to you at some point. because there's just too many, like some of my heaviest days when we owned like four or five businesses at once, deep into FedEx, all of these things. I mean, I'd have 150 phone calls a day and I'm like, I don't want to talk to everybody and I don't care if I talk to half of you, like, and you have to start making decisions on like who is worth talking to and who is not because the day is just so short.
Yeah.
That's been a thing that we have had to, you know, try and measure out. And then with clients, I just try and tell them like on the front end, they probably don't remember it all the time of like, I do my best to get back to everybody. You are not my only seller. But if you give me a couple hours, and usually I'm pretty good about shooting them a text. I won't do it if I'm on like a podcast or something, but like if I'm just on a different call or a Zoom, I can usually text them back and be like, hey man, give me 30 minutes, give me 2 hours, give me, you know, this or that and try and get to them. But at least some version of communication. And some days I have to text them back, hey, it's 9 o'clock at night. Unless you're adamant we call right now, you're first thing on tomorrow's list. And more often than not, it's like, oh, hey, I was just going to ask you these two questions. It can be tomorrow. It's okay.
Yeah.
But
and really that comes down to what you were saying earlier too, about the people who just don't get any follow-ups is as humans, we just hate the unknown. So, and we think everything is important and then we realize, you know, most of it's not like urgent and critical. But doing those little things help setting the expectations. I call back here, or I'll call you in this many hours. Like I'll respond in this kind of way. I think that's always helpful because it makes people feel like, okay, I know he will call back. I know he will respond. It's okay.
Or in that case, text me. If I actively text you like, hey, I'm on a, like, and I'll do that. Hey, I'm in a Google Meet. Shoot me a text if it's textable. Let's do that. Yeah. If not, this one's scheduled to be done in 20 minutes. I'll call you. You're number one on the list, or two or
there
three.
There we go. So, I love it. Yeah, and I think that's important. I love that networking, honesty, integrity, and the follow up even beyond the sales, but just in general, I think that's important. Let's move to the deal that got away. So I think this is interesting because I know you have an interesting one and I'd love to hear, you know, the details that you can share on that. This is also one of those things where, you know, it's the lessons of the lost deal, which to me is not just for any brokers who are listening, but it could be for sellers listening, could be for buyers listening, where, you know, there's lessons to be learned from when something doesn't work out. versus when it does, right? Not always the highlight film, but the punches in the face and the ones where you're like, that's never going to happen again. So what do you have for us?
The one that I think is, and there's several, but the one I think that has the most value for like lessons going forward, and the one I probably learned the most from was, after I had exited with some business partners, they wanted to sell a piece of the business, had several pieces tied to it. And they said, hey, we'll let you kind of unofficially sell this for us. And the second it becomes official, we'll move it to paper, check all the boxes, do all the things. And foolishly, because we'd been in business together, I thought, well, you know, that'll all be fine. And where we messed up, and I'm not going to say it was all them, because it was arguably me some as well, but it was still just handled terribly across all parties, was I didn't know that they had then gone and publicly posted it in the market space. And I had already sent info out to, we'll use Jane Smith. I'd already sent Jane some info like a month before this. And then I call them and I'm like, hey, Jane's very interested. We need to schedule a call. And they said, oh, we know, we've been talking to her for a week. And I'm like, that's not possible. I've been talking to her for a month. And so it got kind of unattractive kind of quickly, because, you know, big deal for them on the line, big commission check for me on the line. Come to find out, I had preset and we had kind of verbally agreed, like, hey, if they're mine, they're mine. If they're yours, they're yours. But like, I had proof, you know, time, date, stamp, text, and email that I had been communicating with them a month prior. Well, beyond that part of the problem that we were going to be able to navigate, it was so terribly handled on their part in that sense anyways. But I trusted them when I should have had it on paper. They turned around and said, well, we have a phone call scheduled with her. We went on ahead and did it. And we explained to her the entire scenario. And I thought, oh, you can't be that stupid. And so they had, before I could, they got on the phone with her. And I had already mentioned to them, like, do not talk to her. This needs to come from me. I'm just telling you, there's going to be ways to say it, ways to build and keep trust. I can make guarantees that you all can't. And those guarantees are not sneaky. Those guarantees are, this is not going to affect you. It is not going to affect the sales price. It's all going to be above board. All the documents are going to be signed, but you were talking to both and now you'll just talk to me. It was such a simple conversation. Like, I didn't even have to prep for this.
Yeah.
And they went and tried to finesse that themselves. They are not salespeople. Lo and behold, we lost the deal. She lost trust in everybody. At the time, I don't remember if we were engaged or not. Anyways, my now wife, like, I showed her the breakup text. I mean, it was a good, you know, one of those real meaty ones. And that breakup text basically said, like, this very much concerns me on, like, I have both people telling me they can sell it. Who's able to sell it? Who am I talking to? I feel very uncomfortable. I don't want to do the deal. Da 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 da. And like, the amount of money that took out of my pocket could make somebody sick. It's just gross to think about. Not that it's all about money, but then it also bothered me that, like, she lost trust in a bad communication between the two of us. It should have never affected her. I could have. And I think what bothers me as a broker is, like, I never got to talk to her on the phone. So I got robbed of the ability of knowing if I could have saved the deal. And maybe that's pride talking, but like, I wish I could have at least, I think what would have made me feel better is if we had lost the deal, I wanted to lose it because of me. Because at that point, my integrity would have come to fruition and I would have laid the deal down and backed away from it entirely and said, go buy the deal anyways. I'll take no check and no cut and I'll just be out. But at least that business fit that buyer so well, I would have just walked away. And it would have saved relationship better. But I think like, I felt like I got robbed of the opportunity of trying because they spoke to her first, told me about it like almost a full day later. And it was just it was done. They'd already killed it. And I was like, I'll never know. So
never know.
After a day or two of beat myself up about it, we moved on. There's another deal. It's fine. You know, but
yeah.
Yeah, that's the one that got away that, you know, probably taught me the most lessons. I should have handled all of the document stuff better. I trusted probably when I shouldn't have. I could have also, like, another thing I learned was like, I went to them and said, hey, like, we're just out. We took down some of the, like, we didn't post anything official. We just posted like some coming soon, some little like feelers, basically, like all above board, all legal, but just some feelers. We took it all down. And I was like, if you guys do a deal, go do a deal, but please, like, please don't call us. And these are former business partners of mine. I was like, I can't help you, nor will I at this point.
Yeah.
Because there's boundaries that got crossed that should have never gotten crossed.
Yeah.
And they knew her name, for whatever reason. I don't know if it just got lost in communication or what, but like, they could have very easily been like, oh, hey, take over. And they tried to challenge it a little bit. And there was just like, I think they saw what they were going to pay me. And in their minds, they could justify like, we don't have to. And I'm like, it just got handled wrong. You know, it's more so sad for me, like I said, of like, I wish I could have had the chance of trying to save it.
Sure. Yeah. Just, if you're going to lose the game, at least lose it because you tried and you lost, right? Not because you weren't in the game.
It's like, I heard an ultra runner, was doing like 100 miler and he was sitting in the chair. He was at an aid station and somebody said that to him. He was like, I'm done. And they said, we don't quit in the chair. Like you can quit. You can lose. You can DNF.
No way. There,
but not sitting in the chair. So if you get 20 feet down the trail and you quit, that's fine.
Sure.
But essentially, like for me, it felt like I had to quit in the chair. I didn't get the chance to like go and try another mile or you know, another pass. And I was like that. I think that's just what bothered me was like, I hope it's not pride talking, just confidence. Like I feel like I could have done it and saved it. Because the trust is built with us.
And it's because you wanted to be in there, right? It's like losing a game from the bench when not just that you could have won the game, but you didn't get a chance to be a part of success or not. And you just had to watch something that didn't work. I think that's the difference, right? It's somewhat the pride, but you know, the pride of not even giving a chance, you know, I think is tough. So, well, I appreciate you sharing that. You know, I said this at the beginning of the end of the first episode. You know, appreciate you sharing and the transparency and the vulnerability and that stuff. I know that the lost deals aren't fun to talk about, but there's a lot of lessons. You know, as humans, we learn a lot more from failure than we do from success. When everything is easy, we don't learn much, and we just think it's easy until you know you get knocked down. You know, like Mike Tyson's famous for saying, like everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the face, right? And it's like that's when you realize like what you've really got, what you can do, what you can handle. So I appreciate you sharing that and everything for the show, even this after show. We've been going on. This is great. I love the marketing tips and all the stuff we talked about and for people tuning in, they want to find out more. Your links will be in the show notes. They can go to nextstep-capital.com. Your email will be in the show notes. They can find you on LinkedIn, Instagram, probably everywhere, which is why your phone is constantly blowing up or why you just have it on silent because it's too much stuff. I know that you have the content out there. I appreciate you being here and sharing so much, Daniel, and being part of the podcast.
Yeah. Loved it, man. I really appreciate it. It's been so much fun.
And for people tuning in, please make sure to check out part one. A lot of this will make more sense. Plus, there was a ton of value. Daniel shared a ton of stuff. I have a lot of notes, and I knew kind of what we were going to talk about, but I still got a lot of notes and a lot of value from this. So make sure to check out part one. Make sure to subscribe wherever you found this and just engage with it. Please engage with Daniel as well, even if it's just to send him a message, but don't expect him to respond quickly for your text or email, but at least, you know, send him something, let him know you found it. You appreciate his effort, his work. And you know, all of that means a lot. Daniel, thank you for being here and for everyone else tuning in. Until next time, stop hoping for deals and start growing your pipeline.
Thanks for tuning in to the Business Broker Growth Show hosted by Jason Cutter. If today's episode helped you think differently about how to build your pipeline and grow your business, share it with another broker who's ready to make the shift from hoping for listings to engineering them. Join us again for the next episode of the Business Broker Growth Show, where brokers become trusted advisors.